welcome to your new life and our new times in what has been labeled as humanity's greatest leap in evolution. Dr. K is here to assist you with holistic tips and tools, clearings and activations for your vibrational upgrade. Dr. Allison J. K. has been working as an energy medicine practitioner for 20 years, having lived in Asia for 10 years to study subtle energy. People refer to Dr. K. as the lightning bolt due to the high voltage of the work she does on behalf of assisting you to thrive in mind, body, and spirit. That is the greatest backdrop to life on planet Earth right now.
Thank you for joining in. I'm here and I'm with Dr. Richard Jelicich, and we are going to be talking about subtle energy and consciousness and how it affects us in unbeknownst ways, typically to the average American. I know that a majority of the listeners already know about subtle energy, and we're going to be talking about it from a little bit of a different slant. Dr. Richard Jelicich is one of the authors I quote in my upcoming book, What If There's Nothing Wrong? And he's in a key position because he's at the end when I'm wrapping up the final arguments. And he has a really good understanding of the mental barriers and constructs and beliefs and points of view that the average American has that makes it difficult to accept and easily understand the subtle energies that they're, as I say in many of my posts, over half the rest of the world operates and centers their paradigm and society and cultural values on. And I lived over there for 10 years exploring these subtle energies and wrote this book as a result of living over there. So I found Dr. Jelicich. He is in Calgary, Canada, and I discovered him through a book I got in India when I was there for my yoga and meditation teacher training. And the book was Eye of the Lotus, and it's presenting information about the chakra system from a bit of a different viewpoint. That grabbed my attention, as well as what was different from Dr. Jelicich's work was that it's a very comprehensive, almost intuitive, I don't even mean to say almost, it seems like an intuitive understanding of what is needed to help cross what I view as a gap we're in America and in the West in general, but in America in particular right now at this time, that if we were to bridge the gap, we would have so much more health, happiness, less complaining, less discomfort, we could just be a totally different country if we would embrace more of the understanding of the subtle energies that are the invisible, that aren't as easy and tangible to prove. So Dr. Jelicich, on that note, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your program.
What do you want to do? What do you want? Your dominant chakra theory is, you want to go into that? Because it's so different than what anybody else presents about the chakra system.
Well, sure. And, most people really don't know what the chakras are other than a color, a keynote, a nervous plexus, and so forth. But basically, the chakras are still us. They're just us on a higher level of ourselves. Think of them as transformers that transform consciousness from a higher level of yourself, not limited to space or time, into this dimension, which is limited in space or time. And a person has seven chakras lined up more or less with the column of the spine, and each chakra affects four archetypes of what it is to be a human being: mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional. Each chakra is a little bit different. And what I noticed over 20 years of doing spiritual counseling and work in this field is that individuals would tend to have one chakra that was more dominant than the others, very much like being right or left-handed. You know, there's nothing wrong with your non-dominant hand. You just don't prefer it. So imagine if the heart chakra, let's say, was more dominant than the others. Well, the others are working just fine, but you would probably be using the attributes related to the heart chakra as if it were, let's say, a green filter, and you were looking through a green filter, and I say, well, you know, actually, you're just looking through a filter. It's actually clearer. Well, of course, you wouldn't understand exactly what I'm saying because you'd be looking at things from a certain perspective. So each chakra has one or more specific psychic abilities that are related to the chakra. Because chakras are consciousness and they're not limited to space or time, they're working 24/7, we never close, affecting the mind, the way the mind works, the way the person perceives and thus reacts to reality. So if the heart chakra is the dominant one, let's say the person is going to tend to be a little bit more empathic. They're going to tend to be a little bit more in what I call a psychic ability called symmetry, which is seeing how all the facets of something go together to make the whole. And as that is a dominance, it also has its strengths. It has its weaknesses. Mm-hmm. It has what a person would come to do in a given lifetime. It has what they would come to learn. It has many attributes related to just the one chakra, that if a person understood that one chakra was a little bit more dominant than the others, it would also help them understand why they tend to perceive and thus react to the exigencies of the emergencies and life's daily occurrences in the way that they do.
Brilliantly, brilliantly said. I think that maybe what we might want to do, if you're feeling up to it and if it's possible, because I know one of the challenges for me is when I teach the chakra system to chunk it out in digestible information because it's such a complex system.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. So, I had a pretty miserable time on my first teleseminar trying to get basic information put out there and then still give tips and tools after giving out the basic information. But that actually backs us up, if we want to go this route, Dr. Jelicic, into why is energy consciousness so difficult and challenging to the Western mind?
Well, because you're asking the individual to believe a paradox. In other words, we live in a oneness. There's no separation. There's only a oneness. And yet every human being experiences a uniqueness that can be empirically proved. I'm here, you're there. And yet even with quantum physics, we now know, for instance, that one particle can exist in two places simultaneously. We know mm-hmm. that a person, for instance, can send energy to another person regardless of the distance instantaneously, not even limited to the speed of light. So we know that something is going on there, but it's really difficult for the mind to think in anything other than non-linear terms. Mm-hmm. So we tend to think like, well, I'm sending you energy. Well, how much energy? But in a higher state of being, there is no quantity. Like in just the next dimension, 2 doesn't follow 1 and B doesn't follow A. So if you're trying to tell the average person that, you know, you are a luminous being of light who also has a physical body simultaneously, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a problem. You're going to have a problem of acceptance. So this is why, you know, when I'm teaching, I'm always drawing examples from science, let's say, because what I have found that the Western paradigm is a bottoms-up paradigm. You know, we take a cell culture, an X-ray, build things up from a subatomic nature to construct our world, whereas the Eastern mind is more of a top-down. So the Western mind is more how things work, and the Eastern mind is more that things work. So yeah. When I'm teaching and attempting to get someone who's born with a Western philosophy to understand, I might use some of the very same science that has separated us for so many years to show like, oh, you see that needle moving? That means something's going on there in your body that's not limited to time or space and yet is still happening. So yes, I agree with you. It is metaphysics is simultaneously the most beautiful and the most difficult thing about our nature. And it has been a privilege to teach it for well over 20 years, although it is a bit of a challenge when someone says, well, you know, I'm critically based, I'm empirically based. Prove it to me. How do you know that it works? So, for instance, I'll do things like flower readings, which is an intuitive session to show that, you know, the intuition is absolutely real, but not limited to any physical locale. It's non-localized consciousness. But the whole point is not the reading. The point is that everyone is part of this consciousness. Everyone has psychic abilities. If one is composed of chakras that are not limited to time or space, then by definition, the person is automatically intuitive and psychic. But as you say, you know, proving that to another person is always an interesting experience.
So then you talk about ultimately that it's a qualitative state, it's a transcendent state, and the linearity of the cognitive mind that I talk about on so many of my shows as a way to help, that we get it downloaded to us when we're on the physical plane so we can chop up all the energy soup and the data so we can handle being in a body on the physical plane. But in fact, there's all of this aliveness going on that's pulsating underneath anything and everything that's alive. It's consciousness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
So when I don't know, that idea alone is it seems like it's okay enough for an average person to understand. But then when translating it into, and when I say average, I mean somebody who hasn't already bridged the bridge mm-hmm. with, yeah, accepting mm-hmm. that this is the way the world works. Because I feel like it's a key for our society, particularly American, but the Western society as a whole. From, you were so right on when you just said, we ask how things work over here, and they say, they just in the East go that it works, and they work from that approach. That's totally my experience from the Chinese in particular.
Right.
So how do, I feel like there's a way to help our society move forward, Richard. I feel like our hesitancy with accepting the invisible in a more full way, like, then right. is something that is hindering us at this point.
I couldn't agree with you more, Allison. And just call me Richard. The thing is that, you know, how do you convince someone who's never had this experience? So, for instance, I would say, well, you know, science can tell you pretty much everything you want to know about an orange, its weight, its acidity, its color. But science can't tell you what the orange tastes like. So without a direct revelatory experience, everyone's situation or encounter with metaphysics just becomes an academic or an intellectual issue. Mm-hmm. And awareness is not conceptual thinking or the imagination or the intellect. Mm-hmm. It's a higher state of being, what you just said, the qualitative state. And so, for instance, one way I've found to help people is, for instance, when I mentioned flower readings, or if I'm doing a spiritual counseling session, what I'm actually doing is putting myself at risk because I have nothing to go on. I don't use cards or anything. I just use direct, and yes. my clients are all over the planet. So, but the point being that if I can ferociously trust what my feelings are telling me, I don't mean emotions, I mean my intuition, ferociously trust what my intuition is telling me, it doesn't work in the same way as my five senses. And so for the right. average person, this is frustrating and it can be awkward and confusing. But when you start to awaken your higher sense perceptions, well, they don't work in the same way as the five senses, but the higher perceptions see things as they are, not as they appear to be. So as I said, one way I've found to help bridge this gap is with that direct experience with another person or a group of people to show them that this is in fact real, because if I don't take the risk, why should they? You see? But if they have an experience, they go, well, how could he possibly know that? How can mm-hmm. that possibly be? It's what the Japanese call poking holes in the teacup. You know, once you start to crack the porcelain of the ego, it can't uncrack and it can only crack more. So I use techniques such as a little bit of science and a little bit of direct experience to help poke those holes as best and as gently as I can.
Fantastic. And you know, it's great to be hearing you describe that this is what you do, because in fact, it's what I do too. A lot of the times I'll go with the hands, coming, having the palms face each other and having them come about an inch apart and then pulling them apart by about 6 inches. So they end up feeling the magnetic pull in between the chakras at the ends of the palms and all the life force coming out of them. So they're sensing that something's there with a higher sensory equipment as you're talking about. So I'm really grateful to hear you say that, because that's what I've been doing too. And then the other half is science. Yeah. As you know from my book, even the part that you're in, I mean, I am definitely bringing in lots of science to help support where the cognitive mind needs support. But there really is another aspect of trust. And this is also another part of your work that I bring into my book that helps with the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, an inherent challenge when we're so used to our minds being able to get proof that something is real, and we're then asked to trust our own sensing from something right. invisible. people.
That's right. Yeah, and it's so easy to be critical, you know. In fact, my favoritest of all people are the skeptics, because a true skeptic is the one who's willing to ask the questions that must be asked. But you know the old saying, if you look for the truth hard enough, you might just find it. So the true skeptic must then change the situation to fit the facts. Mm-hmm. This is what has happened to science a lot over the past 20 years, is they're starting to find that, you know, Newtonian mechanics does not describe how the entire universe works, and that, you know, there's actually these things like toroidal energy fields and vortex equilibriums and things like that, that the vacuum actually holds the possibility for all material matter to take place. I'll give you one if you got a moment. May of last year, NASA, National Aeronautics and Space yep. Administration, which I used to work with them when I was an engineer many years ago, they made an announcement. They had a satellite orbiting the Earth called the Gravity Probe B, and its purpose was to validate two aspects of Einstein's theories. That Einstein said 100 years ago that his theory was there's a fourth dimensional energy vortex that surrounds the Earth. That's amazing. Well, 100 years ago, there was no technology to prove it. So this Gravity Probe B satellite made microgravimetric measurements of Earth's gravity field and did, in fact, verify there really is a fourth dimensional energy vortex. Now, this is shattering news, and nobody knows this.
Right, right.
This was May of 2011, but here's the real kicker. Is that NASA has it backwards. It is the vortex that is generating the possibility for Earth to exist in space-time, not the other way, the way around. Just exactly the same as the human energy field, the true aura is the combination of the chakras, Ida Pingala Sushumna, which actually holds the physical nature of the human being in space-time in this dimension. And once that is withdrawn, that's when we say, oh, well, there's Dr. J's body or there are his remains. But they never say that's him, right? So there is in the news, you know, right there, if you'll excuse the phrase, in your face, they're saying, you know, that this is in fact real. In fact, some of the thinkers like David Wilcock and Nassim Haramein and others, they're talking about this vortex equilibrium. And the reason I'm even saying this now is to show you that the very science that's trying to have a fundamental understanding of our universe is saying there's a lot more going on a higher level of reality than just the material physical dimension. So it helps us to understand, you and I, that we really do have this luminous, multidimensional nature, and that we're living in an era of time, as put forth in the yugas. This is the Dwapara Yuga. We're supposed to become aware of these subtle forces. It's intended that 7 billion people become aware of this. If you think about it, 400 years ago, we discovered electricity, magnetism, and gravity, and very quickly we realized, hey, wait a minute, these forces have always existed, right? But then no one's ever seen electricity. You know, when you see a spark, that's the force ionizing a molecule, making it give off photons of light. No one's ever seen gravity and so forth. And here, just 400 years later, we're discovering chakras exist and we're proving it. We're proving meridians exist. We're proving one person can send power to another. The human body emits light, more light over a chakra center by a factor of 10 to the 2, 10 to the 3, more over a chakra center than anywhere else on the body. Mm-hmm. You and I, we're supposed to know this. All of us are, to help us understand what Sogyal Rinpoche calls the true nature of who we are, that we really are these spirits who are having a physical experience.
Okay, but the chakra system was discovered way back in India, centuries and centuries and centuries ago. And then science is just now starting to prove, to quote unquote prove. Yeah. So you're brilliant. Richard, I mean, what you're talking about is what I trace in my book about how Newtonian mechanical quantum theory, mechanical theory is no longer, it's too mechanical, it's too gross, as the Buddhists call the gross and subtle consciousness. It's too unwieldy, it's too physically based, that the nature of our existence is much more consciousness based and subtle energy based. And it's exciting because, like Greg Braden's talking about, how have you heard him talk about how, why isn't any of these new sciences, like what you're talking about right there, why isn't that what we hear about? why aren't our textbooks based on, say, even in 1905, which is when they first discovered the observer effect? We've been dealing with that for over 100 years, and still it hasn't shown up, really, in the classroom physics textbooks. It doesn't show up in our mainstream society. It's still on lockdown with the more mechanical heaviness of the Newtonian physics when it's not that way anymore.
Well, part of it is in your book about the meta-paradigm. You know, the paradigm is shifting, but not because human beings are saying, oh, you know what, it's time for a shift. It's because no. It's because of the cosmology of our time. There really are these periodic alignments to the galactic center, and there really are what are called platonic vortices of alignments between the planets that really do happen that induce the transformation of consciousness. And ancient cultures have known this. And then there's the more, I don't know how to put this, but, you know, science and history are always written by the winner, you know. So there's a lot of that, too, that doesn't really get into the classroom. And like you say, it should. But you don't want to do it as one would launch a tsunami of information. You know, for some people, this is completely off the deep end. Like if you were to take the recording of this radio show and play it for a group of people, for some people, this would be like it was coming from another planet. Even though to me, this information is pertinent and relevant to all human beings because we're all composed of a spiritual nature that has a physical existence. So the point being, of what benefit is it to know that? Why should we know that? I mean, if you're saying, hey, look, you know, there's more to you than meets the eye, because then you would overcome the illusion of your separation and you would overcome unnecessary suffering. That's why I do what I do.
Same here. If you look at all the radio show titles, I mean, it's the same as why I do what I do. So if we knew, so we're talking about our energy body, the spiritual body that is actually bigger than our physical body, and it doesn't actually fit in our physical body. Yeah?
They occupy the same space at the same time.
But our energy body extends beyond our physical body, yeah?
Indeed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's in a sense bigger?
Well, again, you mentioned the word qualitative, you know, and bigger is a quantitative term. So, yes, human energy field can be measured out to a certain distance with electrophysiological equipment. Mm-hmm. But to me, our energy field is limitless.
Yeah.
That it doesn't operate within the realm of space-time only. And so, you know, the average person will say, well, fine, we'll prove it. Well, this is when you hear spiritual teachers saying, well, yes, you know, I saw this plant growing in another part of the world. And the student says, well, have you been there? No, but I see it there just the same. So this goes back to when a person awakens themselves, you have an awareness that's not the same thing as your intellectual knowledge or X number of years in your body. There's a wonderful documentary called Yogis of Tibet. And one of the yogis is speaking and he says, you can have knowledge that is academic, but when you have the experience, you have awakened your wisdom. So what he's trying to say is that we have access to higher states of being within us already, what the Buddhists call the sweetness, which means that within you which is already perfect. And so this is why, for yourself, for instance, you became a teacher of yoga. You understand a yoga philosophy. And so when you are teaching your students the yoga, you're helping them to awaken the chakra centers, which then gives the intersection to the higher dimensions of understanding. And that quality of the higher self infuses itself into the waking cognitive mind,
yeah.
but it changes the actual mind because your awareness has now shifted.
And that's it right there. That's the transcendent state. That's the bridge, right, that a person moves through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so it's experientially based. So if you're listening to us and you feel like we're talking, if you hung in there and you still are finding like every other word being a foreign language, good for you, because you've had some level of awakening that's keeping you here.
Well, that's true. And one of the things I tell my students is 95% of all communication is not verbal or physical. It's consciousness. It's energy. And of course, I don't mean 95% like a literal number. It just means most of who we are is not physical or verbal. If you take the average atom, it's 99.99999% empty space. So you and I, technically, mostly empty, but the consciousness of who we are radiates out infinitely. In fact, in my book, I talk about how we subconsciously take a psychic relationship to everyone long before the mind ever thinks a single thought. And it's quite automatic and it works perfectly. We just haven't been educated to the fact that this is real and that this really is happening all the time.
But I think that from my understanding of the Chinese culture and the communication, and I write about this very much in my book too, because the Chinese communication style, the system's indirect and so much less is said and so much more is communicated through facial expressions, through body posture, through body language, through energy that then when I say through energy, I mean through smiles, through holding a certain feeling in the interaction with somebody, intending a certain feeling into the interaction with somebody. So it's a lot more energy based. And I feel like it's what you just said in practice. It's the awareness of so much more that goes on is on the unseen realms and what we actually see, touch, taste, feel with our five senses.
Just so.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, so going back to your main point, you know, how does the average person who is earnest and forthcoming and wants to know about subtle energy and consciousness, you know, how do you educate that person? Like, for instance, I'm from San Diego, and we're talking now from Calgary, Canada, because I have many students here also, as well as in the United States, so I live here part-time too. And I've noticed that many people in Canada have this thirst, that this real thirst for what is the spiritual nature of what I call the whole human being, you know, mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional. And so when someone comes to you earnestly wanting to understand what is the true nature, how do you go about teaching that to that person? How do you go represent it? Well, one way for you, for instance, is you write your book on Metaparadigm, or you have a radio program like the one we're listening to right now. And all of that has to do with what is called effort. And the effort was what defines the character of the human being, not how long it takes, but that you do it. So if someone earnestly is listening to this show and they go, oh my gosh, most of this is so over my head, but I'm digging what they're saying. Yes, but 95% of that is consciousness. And there is a part of those people listening even now or to a recording that is getting this as a form of awareness on a much deeper level of being, and we call this resonance, or more accurately, we call it alignment. They are aligning to a higher state of being within themselves, even if the intellectual part isn't quite, you know, making sense yet, because some people may not be familiar with the terminology you and I are using, as you said.
Brilliant. So that could explain to people why I have clients saying this to me with these looks on their faces that are just so beautiful. They don't even know why sometimes they're doing what they're doing. They're like, I want to go to this workshop, or I want to go to this place and listen to this talk. And I don't even know. I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's to get kind of like what I refer to as a download and, or, a transmission. Like it's in that 95%, no, the 99% that you're talking about. It's what's getting communicated. That isn't through the words, that isn't through the cognitive linear mind grasping to understand the how and the why. Instead, it's beyond what's getting kind of like transmitted to the back of your head, or the unconsciousness circulating throughout all of the energy in your field. And like if it's more insightful or intuitive, it's going to be up at the sixth chakra in between the eyebrows. If it's something to do with power, it's going to be at the second chakra. So it's going to distribute out through your system differently, and you're learning and growing even though your mind doesn't even get what we're saying. It's crazy, isn't it, to some that haven't had the experience yet? Because ultimately, the catch-22 of the craziness about this is that we don't even – how do we get to approach something like this when our cognitive mind is just saying, this is a foreign language. Why would I listen to that? I'm so unattracted to that. I'm not going to – I need –
That's right.
So it's like our mind will repel us until we've had a certain level of experiences in our lives to actually make the space in our – entire being to approach something that seems that foreign to us, but our mind, we don't allow to dismiss it anymore.
Yeah, and that's the egoic structure. And one of the coolest things about being human being is that our chakras are us on a higher level, and we have to be able to own every one of us that we will create the situation and circumstance that when the consciousness is ready, you will always create the situation or circumstance to step into the next level of understanding. The humor in it is the mind is always the last thing to catch on to what's really going on.
Totally.
You know, our consciousness has it, our emotions have it, but our mind's going, wait a minute, I haven't figured this out yet, so therefore it must be crap. Well, yes, and then you'll have another experience. And that because when you own that you really are a luminous being of light, even if you just take it on faith, if you own that you can always create the situation or circumstance that emancipates you from your limitations, then you are further along the path towards getting over that illusion that you're separate, that you can't create, that you can't be abundant, that you can't be aware. All of those little protestations from the egoic structure that give you every reason why you can't do something when, in fact, you're already part of oneness. There's nothing to find because nothing's lost. You're already there. So we spend a lifetime or more discovering something that's already true. And spiritual teachers like you come along and say, well, okay, let's find the tools by which we can empower the individual to grasp this fully and completely for themselves so they can self-empower. And to me, that's what you're doing.
Thank you. That's a brilliant compliment. You're doing much the same, yeah?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we, you know, it's like the students that come to me don't realize that they have co-created the healer's training, let's say, that I do. They just, well, I found out about this, or my friend took it, so I want to take it. So part of my role is to help them understand that their spirit within them is consciously creating the environment for them to exceed their own expectations, to exceed their own limitations. And the more you own that, and of course, what's the largest measure in that? Faith. Faith is trusting with your heart, which your mind cannot yet know. You know, I'm just quoting something that I've written down, but in essence, that's what it is. And that's hard for us because who wants to be wrong? Who wants to be vulnerable? Well, none of us, but to access the higher states, for instance, prayer and meditation without faith, just thinking. Yoga without faith, just stretching. So our reach must exceed our grasp. So what happens is we reach what's called the dweller on the threshold or the dark night of the soul, you know, where we have to take that step of faith before we can know how it's going to turn out.
I've taken quite a few of those in my life.
And, you know, those are two really nice terms. I like it, dweller on the threshold, dark night of the soul. But you know what psychologists call it? They call it the annihilation of the soul. That's scary. No wonder someone would say, I don't want that spiritual path. That's not for me. But what happens is when a person takes a spiritual path, more of your stuff comes up.
Do you mean annihilation of the ego, Richard?
Yeah. Well, annihilation of the soul is the way I remember it, so.
Yeah, this whole book that I'm publishing that I'm sharing your wisdom in and my discoveries in is based on something I saw in a psychology book that threw me for a loop, that they would label it something, they label intuition as something to distrust and that it would lead us into erroneous logic and possibly irrational conclusions. I didn't know that, what you're just saying. That's why I'm questioning. Like, wouldn't they call it the destruction of the ego? But you're saying they call that the destruction of the soul?
The annihilation of the soul is how I remember it, yeah.
When, in fact, you're going in to meet it, in a sense.
Yeah, just so. And so that's the thing is an example would be if I ask my students, has anyone here ever had a bad dream? Yes. Where is the dream now? Well, it's not here. Well, it's the same thing. The fears are the illusions, and the greatest fear may come for you, but it will evaporate over time because it has no substance. So the intuition is not everything, but it is a gateway that can open the higher levels of the human being's experience of the real, overcoming the unreal or the illusion of separation.
Which is what might keep me not moving forward, what might keep me afraid, depressed, thinking I can't have abundance, thinking I can't have love, thinking I can't get that job that I want, thinking I'm meant to suffer because that's all I've seen around me. So I'll stay or I'll go on Prozac and I'll stay in a limited state because I'm buying in the limitations or the separation that the ego mind puts forth.
Oh, yeah. Fear is an excellent tool. It doesn't require any truth at all to be effective.
And yet, but isn't that what the average experience is before we step into this higher level of awareness? And I don't mean to overstate it because there's different degrees, right? Like in every day we're making these momentary choices that are leading us more towards more openness and awareness and engagement with our higher self and the higher truths of reality and bringing that into our daily experience. And in other moments, we're making bigger choices when we like engage in like a move to a new location or a launching of a new program. But at all times, we're making choices to engage with that level of aliveness or level of, I don't want to say reality, but level of existence or not. And so it's funny because it's like just beyond where the struggle is, you can reach for something else.
That's right. And that's where the faith is you, when you see it and no one else does, and everybody wants to render their opinion to you as to why you shouldn't do that. But yet everything inside of you is saying, no, no, this is my truth. I must head in this direction. So the gurus have a great saying for that. They say in the end, it's between you and God. It isn't between you and anybody else. And what's one of the things we fear the most? What other people think about us. So this is where the path of spirituality and higher levels of consciousness is incredibly intimate, because only the individual can open their heart to their higher levels of being. And so, you know, I'm all about self-empowerment, helping the individual stand completely on their own two feet, becoming self-realized, self-empowered beings. But every person, wasn't it Joseph Campbell that said, we all choose our entry into the dark forest? You know, we all have that faith that we must engage in, which is us constituting the circumstances and the lessons for ourselves that most precisely measure the karma that we came in this given lifetime to overcome. So if you think about that, you could say, oh boy, I've got a new challenge specifically suited for me. Well, who does that? You know?
Right.
We all think, oh man, here we go again. Yeah. I don't want to have to go through this, but it's hard, but that's what it is. And the measure of faith to trust with your heart, you know, or to know that something's true when there's no physical evidence to support it. The faith is what breaks through the protestations of the ego into the higher levels of awareness.
That's really beautifully said. So collectively, it seems almost like we're at that level in American society. Like there's a breakthrough that's about to happen, but there's a hell of a lot of resistance going on right now from the collective ego mind at the paradigmic level, not at our level of individuals doing this engagement already.
I think so too. You know, even in the 90s in the States, that a lot of people ran back to fundamental religions because they felt it was a safe harbor to be in. You know, and to a certain measure, you know, this is very good. But, you know, you even have people like the Dalai Lama and what was a recent book I was just looking at yesterday, talking about how we need to move beyond the religiosity of our beliefs into a spiritual direct knowing where we come to that direct inner revelatory experience of the truth of our nature. And I believe personally that we all are collectively headed in that direction. I believe this golden age that some of the ancient cultures speak of is happening, and that we are going in that direction. A lot of news on the TV, contrary evidence, but my personal belief is that we are getting to that place.
And you lead like I do. I mean, that's what the nature of the show is too, is to help us through the energies of 2012. You have a couple of trips planned next year you work with a Mayan elder, correct?
Oh yeah. That's November 23rd. We're going to the area of the Yucatan. We do every year, as a matter of fact, sometimes more than once a year. And the fellow I work with is an amazing spiritual brother. His name is Miguel Angel Vergara. He was actually the director of Chichen Itza for more than 4 years. So when he and I take people on these journeys, you know, they're spiritual journeys. They're not sightseeing or tours. You know, we do ceremony, and he knows the oral traditions, and I know the lectures and the astronomy and all of that. So we do a 9-day journey going to sacred sites and all of that. And of course, you know, 2012 is a point on a moving wheel. These tours that we do to the land of the Maya, Last year we were in Guatemala and Honduras and Copan and Quiroa, and we will continue these tours at least through 2017, because there is you know, a lot of people who want to connect with the cosmology of cultures of people who understand the consciousness [S2] Yes. [S1] Of the human being. And the Mayan calendars are the only calendars we know of that have to do with the evolution of consciousness, not just time and space. And that's why I align with them, not because they're Mayans, but because they were a culture who understood a lot about consciousness, just like the Tibetan Buddhists do, you know. So, yes, we do these trips. In fact, we're going to be doing more of them.
And we have the openings that we have more people opening to the awakening process because of the openings that you're talking about, that the Mayans, you didn't connect this yet, but you were talking about universal alignments and plena. I don't even, platonic openings is what I thought you said.
In David Wilcock's book, Source Field Investigations, I really like this guy because, you know, he just gets the information and he puts it out there. What science is finding out now is that the orbits of planets are described by the various platonic solids, the tetrahedron, hexahedron, octahedron, dodeca, and icosahedron, the five basic solids that describe the way all material matter is connected to itself. And what he found was that what he put forth from his research is that the vertices of these platonics of every orbit of each planet is different. Like one might be tetrahedron, one might be hexahedron, or so forth. But these vertices line up. And when they do create a kind of a quasi-portal, if you'll excuse the word. And what it does is it offers the opportunity to accelerate consciousness or to open a gateway to higher states of being. And this is why the ancient cultures were talking about galactic alignments, you know, 5,000 year periodicities, 26,000 years, 62 million year periodicities, and that these are real and these did happen. You find it interesting to note that ancient cultures, you know, the Maoris of New Zealand, the Hopis, the Mayans, the Tibetans, they all talked about 2012. But how could that be over 1,000 years ago? These cultures didn't have the cell phone or the satellites to connect with each other. But why did they all talk about 1 year? And the answer is very simple. All of those cultures at one time had reached what is called unity consciousness. It means they reached such a high state of consciousness, they understood the affect of space-time upon the corporeal nature of the human being, and they understood that at certain times, like 2012, there would be an esoteric and biological shift in consciousness that would happen anyway. And so 2012 is one of an infinite series of 2012s that will occur in space-time, which we just happen to be living through one right now. And so it behooves us to take advantage of it. Because if an astrologer says, today is a good day to do this, well, it's because they're talking about this word I brought up before, alignment. Mm-hmm. Even when the rishis knew that we were going into a period where a lot of human beings would fall asleep, they started writing the Vedas, like the Rig Veda, you know, and these were never meant to be read, they were meant to be sung, so that we would align ourselves to higher states of being. Well, now we're in the 2012 era, where if, for instance, you pray, or you have the yoga philosophy, or meditate, or some form of spiritual practice, all of that helps to align you to a much higher state of being that has nothing or little to do with the intellectual state of the human being.
Which
this
then,
is an amazing time to be alive.
It totally is. And so what's happening, I find, though, for a fair amount of people is they're calling me up. They're like, my body is in so much pain. I'm so tired this week. I have weird headaches. I'm seeing lights. I'm experiencing vertigo. Went to bed for 3 days last week. And it's like all of it's signs of these awakening times and the physical body adapting. It's, yeah?
Just so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And correspondingly, you know, and I know you know this, but I want to say it for your listeners, is we have to be careful about fascination. And we have to be careful about distraction. You know, we have the volumetric equivalent of the mass information age, you know, where you have your little computer that has a subroutine that calls a phone, but it's basically a computer. And you can tour the Louvre or download the Vedas, you know, and you can, the rapidity by which this can be done is astounding, but that's not awareness. And you have to be careful that you don't equate technology with awareness, because those are called externalizations. In other words, our consciousness is at a point where we can create these technologies but they are only externalizations of where our consciousness is right now. And the trick is, don't let yourself get distracted by all of the material stuff that's going on in the world. So what I tell my students is inner focus and then outer flexibility. Inner focus first and then outer flexibility, because I'm concerned so many people becoming distracted with all of the stuff going on nowadays.
Like little kids in a consciousness playground?
Little kids saying, I need my cell phone. I'm five already, so I need to have that. And I need my iPad and this and that. And equating that with a level of consciousness. And it's not exactly the same thing.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I want to actually come back to how do we experience the second and third chakra if they're dominant. If my third chakra is dominant, what am I going to be experiencing? How does that help me have better relationships and vitality and health?
Okay. Well, your third chakra.
Thank you for your flexibility, your art of flexibility.
Sure. Well, first off, to me, that's not your dominant chakra, but the third chakra.
Wait, what did you mean? Are you talking about my dominant chakra?
Oh, yeah.
What's mine?
Is it okay to say on the air?
Yeah.
Oh, Vishuddhi, the throat.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, no question. Anyhow, the third chakra is solar plexus. It's the yellow one. It's also called Manipura. Its main psychic ability has to do with what's called incisiveness. Incisiveness, you know, get to the point, what's the bottom line, who's the guy behind the curtain, that kind of stuff. And so if one's dominant chakra is the third chakra, you're going to tend to want to see things as they are. Of course, the crummy humor is the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. So, you know, you may find little truths in this lifetime. And I know your third chakra is working just fine. I just don't think it's the dominant one. But when the third chakra is awakened, you perceive higher and higher levels of truths, the integration of all things in oneness. You tend to see things as they are. And so correspondingly, you know, can you be with other people who don't see things as they are, but they're making the effort? Can you be with other people who come to you and they couldn't find the truth with two hands and a flashlight? Can you be with people who really want to learn but may not learn as quickly as you do? So you learn a lot of patience. You learn a lot of benevolence, loving sincerity. You learn to be absolutely confident and absolutely humble in the same moment. And you learn, I'm in the third chakra, that it never really was about whether you had power. It was always about how were you using the power that you have. And so in the truth of accepting of your power is a quietness. You know that you know that you know that you know. There's no need to prove because you're already in that state of knowing. So, yeah, the third chakra is really cool because it's about one's uniqueness, one's truth, and one's power. And it takes a whole third chakra just to have a uniqueness of being, right?
Yeah.
So, evidently, I mean, I'm sure your third chakra is quite pronounced because of your spiritual practices as well, right?
Thank you. Yeah, that happy canary yellow solar plexus upper abdomen area. It's been worked with and continues to be worked with. And yeah, I actually, when I read your book, the second chakra was the one that came to me as my dominant chakra.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, you're the one who's putting forth the theory, so I would trust yours.
Just my opinion. Yeah.
Well, what would be the qualities of somebody who then is a fifth chakra dominant person?
Fifth chakra is the throat, also called Vishuddhi, with a V like Victor. Its main psychic ability is a telepathy. And yes, it can be you finish people's sentences for them. You know the paragraphs going forward ever gets there. But it's more accurately, it would be understanding the nature of the character of the human being. From an understanding, or more precisely from a comprehension. And so one of the things I didn't talk about, which would be good to introduce here, is the mind cannot do what a chakra does, and yet they're both you, another paradox.
Mm-hmm.
So the chakras are you, not limited to space or time, but your physical mind is you, limited to space or time. So every chakra generates in the mind a fundamental fear. And the fear that the throat chakra generates in the mind is, no one knows me for who I truly am. It comes in three flavors: how you understand yourself, how you understand others, and how they understand you. So this motivation, if the chakra is dominant, is going to be to get people to hear you, to get them to understand you, and likewise you, them, and you yourself. So the externalization of that takes many forms, especially along the line of communication. But the fundamental psychic ability of every chakra is not just incoming. Most people, when they think about psychic abilities, it's very similar to the ears. You know, we wait for a sound to come to our ear, and then we process it. But chakras are actually interactive. They also send power. So, for instance, if you are a spiritual healer and you send power from your throat chakra to someone, it actually can heal the mind, or can heal the way someone thinks, or can help them become aware of a higher state just by sending that power through throat chakra. So to me, your throat chakra is very strong, and I believe it to be dominant, which what you would come to do in this lifetime, as I said in my book, I'm just quoting from the book right now, to articulate what cannot yet be known, which means you would have a higher level of understanding, and you would attempt to promulgate or make that formal to others and try to get them to understand. But what you're coming to learn in this lifetime is to trust what your feelings are telling you, not whether you have the intuition, but whether you're actually trusting it. So because the mind can't do what any chakra does, in the case of the throat chakra, the mind tends to become prescient. It gets a little ahead of itself. So you start thinking about what you're thinking about, what you're thinking about, what you're thinking about. And so you have a very busy mind. You have a highly intellectual mind, but it's also very busy. And I believe it's you said I could say this. So I believe this is how the throat chakra or the Vishuddhi chakra is affecting your mind. And of course, because 95% of communication is not verbal or physical, everyone sees everyone's chakras. So when they see your chakras, they think teacher. They think you should just know the answer. So no question that you've been working on your third chakra. But a second chakra is more visceral than any of the other chakras. It's more connected to the five sense perceptions. I call it the visceral or sensuous chakra of the five senses. And its main psychic ability is called the energy of the mystic. It means how you can see a person or a thing or a place as whole and complete before it actually happens. You see the potential. And, of course, what that person comes to learn is self-validation, faith, what they do is good enough. And like I said, this is a whole I've taught this as a four-unit, 40-hour class. You know, it's been taught in other colleges as well. So this is just kind of a thumbnail of what these three chakras in particular that I mentioned, their affect to the human being.
Well, Richard, do you want to talk about some of the – you have a couple of new classes coming up. Why don't we take – now's perfect. The spiritual healers training?
Uh-huh. It's called healers training for the whole human being. And I have students in the U.S. and Canada, and I'm starting a new group in Chicago on November 3rd and 4th. And people can just go to my website and download a free information packet. It's about 16 pages. And I'm starting new groups next year. I hope to start a new group in Monterey, new groups in Calgary, and in San Diego. And the way it works is, for right now, if there's enough interest in a given area and enough students, I will start a group there. And next year, I'm going to be training teachers to do what I do, because we're starting to get so many students now, I can't personally teach all of these classes.
Brilliant.
It's a 2-year, 18-level course.
So none of these courses are online. It's all local to the areas you're talking about on your website, lightnews.org, L-I-G-H-T news.org.
Yeah, I do have webinars that I teach. Miguel Angel and I do free webinars. I also have webinars on the chakras. And I also, of course, as you know, do spiritual counseling, and I have workshops as well. So the website's pretty big, and there's a lot to look at.
Yeah, there's a lot of pretty colors to see, too. It's a great website. You've been, by the way, I think that you might be, I'm going to go relook at Eye of the Lotus and see the second and the fifth description, but I know that I picked up meditation back in 1992 out of a need to get help with slowing down my mind and being able to be more master of my entire system instead of my mind just racing ahead. So definitely you might have something there.
Okay. Well, that's a benefit, because if you truly are dominant there, as I suspect you are, it means you go out and get the information first, and then you step it down in a format that we can understand.
That sounds accurate. So you guys, look at how intuitive he is. Look at that. So 8news.org. Dr. Richard Jellicich, G-E-L-U-S-I-C-H. With the website, so the link is right here on the radio show's page. You guys can go find out more about how to work with him and the trips to Mexico. And thank you. Many, many blessings to you, and I look forward to more with you, sir. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on your show.
It was my honor. Have a great day.
You as well.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for joining us and allowing yourself this time to expand and become more of who you're here to be. Dr. K has a range of different offerings of her vibrational upgrades at all price points, including free. So for more information, please go to www.alisonjk.com. Dr. K's first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is available on Amazon.com. Dr. K also has a weekly clearing and activation call that is attended by her most advanced clients and students, an important activity in keeping themselves aligned and their vibration high. We'd love to have you come and play. Om Shanti.